Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this next podcast installment recorded on March 27th, 2009. The title of this podcast is Toxic Shock Syndrome. And with me today, as always, is Becca Martinson.
Hello, everyone.
Today, we will be talking about some exciting new developments that are coming to the site, and some exciting developments in getting the word out and spreading the Crash Course message. So, first we'll discuss these developments, and then some interesting economic developments, and then our main topic, which is the latest government plan to buy $1 trillion in toxic assets from financial companies, before closing with a subscriber question. So, about the site, Becca, we've got a lot of stuff going on right now, and I wanted to tell people about it because it's not always obvious that there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. I mean, we're slaving away back here and got a lot of exciting things coming up. And I just wanted to let people know about it in part because you're going to be seeing some fairly significant changes to how the website looks and feels and navigates coming over the next couple of weeks. So little heads up around that. One of the things that we're reacting to and responding to is a lot of feedback that we've gotten that the site is sort of a one-stop shopping right now. Everybody comes and sees the same thing. And some people felt that for a brand fresh visitor, somebody who's just coming to the site for the first time, that it should be a slightly different experience, potentially with less items on the site and an easier navigational feel and just really focusing the content down to something that's really important for a first-time visitor to see. So what we're going to do is we're going to reorganize the site around somebody's experience level and give people the opportunity to custom tailor the site in ways that work for them for more experienced users. So we're really excited about that new color scheme. We're looking to present a less urgent sort of a color scheme, something that really can promote what we believe, which is that it's time to be calm and rational and really put our best foot forward in this current environment. So that's what we're going to be doing around the site. Keep an eye out for that. Now, remember, the goals of the site really are to raise awareness. That's what the Crash Course is. That's what the Daily Digest is about. That's what my blog, Crash Concepts, is about. It's about raising awareness. But even more importantly, the site is about connecting people. So it's a place for many people to discover, hey, I'm not as alone as I thought. And what we want to do in this site, one of our primary goals underneath it all, is to be a positive force in the cultural transition as we move away from a position of I towards a position of we. And we think the site can be an important way for people to gather and pull around together and be in relationship with each other around this material as we take steps and get to know each other and wrestle with some pretty weighty concepts and shifts that might be coming. One of the new features that we're going to be bringing to the site is just bad name for it right now, but we're calling it groups. We're going to come up with a better name, I hope, at some point. And the idea behind the groups is to allow people to organize in two separate ways. The first is by geography, allowing people to identify each other by proximity and forming groups to get together around the Crash Concepts, either for further education or to take steps and preparations in order to meet each other and provide that support that's important from people who live in your neck of the woods.
So the group's functionality is so important, and it's something that we've come to realize in our personal lives, just the relationships that we have with other people as we prepare and get ready for a changing future is critical. And we want to be able to offer this to everyone around the world. And so creating this group's functionality is really just a way of giving you what we already are blessed to have. And it's just a critical, critical piece. And we hope it works.
Absolutely. But groups can also be organized by interest. And the interest doesn't have to be located to a spot. Of course, interest could be worldwide. So there'll be two different ways to organize. And we're really excited about this. That's a change that's probably coming somewhere around the middle of April is when we think we're going to be rolling that out. So just keep an eye out for that. I just want you to be aware that there's some big developments at the site itself. We also have some very exciting news here. I realize that sometimes I do a poor job of communicating what's going on behind the scenes here at chrismartinson.com. So the first is that a book is being very actively worked on at this point in time, and we've got just a great team assembled to help with that process. I'm going to be on Jim Puplava's Financial Sense NewsHour. The spot is going to be taped April 16th, And I'm not entirely sure when it will play, but I assume that's going to be on Saturday, April 18th. Keep an eye out for it then. I'll certainly let you know when I find out when it's going to air. That's very exciting news. And I've just been invited to speak at the National and International ASPO Conference, ASPO, the Association for the Study of Peak Oil. That's going to be in Denver this October from the 11th to the 13th. That's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. That's a huge development for me because a lot of the people that I learned from at their knees, so to speak, are going to be there speaking as well. So this is just an enormous opportunity. Matt Simmons will be there, a number of other of my heroes in the field of peak oil study. So those are a few of the things on our plate. How would we summarize that, Becca?
Well, just quickly, we've got the whole site redesign, and I wish you all could see the multitude of whiteboards scattered all over our house with arrows and lines and circles attempting to figure out exactly what this is going to look like. It's been very, very complex, and I hope you'll be patient with us, but we're very excited about it. We're working on the groups functionality, which will be ready in a few weeks. Working on the book, managing the growing site. And for this, we have two new team members who we are just thrilled beyond belief with. Tito Kraft, who's helping us right now record this podcast, and Megan Walsh, who is working behind the scenes as an assistant. It's just been so helpful having these guys. I can't even tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Still working on podcasts and Martinson reports and getting those blog posts up a little more regularly. Anything else to add right now?
No, I'm sure if I thought about it hard enough, I could think of a few other things, but that's enough of a list for right now. It's got me scared. So I want to get into the meat of today's podcast. This is called Toxic Shock Syndrome, and I'm going to preface this by starting out by noting that in 2007, I wrote this following quote, which some of you will recognize as from the intro to the position paper on buying gold and silver, which you can find in the Take Action section of the site. So here's what I wrote. Remember, this is 2007. There is no way to have a cleaning of balance sheet excesses without running enormous risks with the economy and possibly the entire financial system itself. So policymakers feel they have no other option than to keep easing, regardless of future consequences. All of the above is a slightly roundabout way of saying that policymakers always prefer to put off for tomorrow that which might cause some pain today. And further, that postponement usually makes things worse, not better. Said another way, we can probably count on our authorities countering the problems that sprang from cheap money by issuing an even larger flood of even cheaper money. If you want to know how this story goes, just ask a still-living heroin addict. The rest are unavailable for comment. A little bit of cheap money requires an even larger dose, and then larger and larger doses to achieve even a little bit of relief. In money terms, this means you can expect inflation, and lots of it. So I wrote that in 2007. It certainly seems prophetic. You know, how did I know that we were going to be easing in all of the myriad numerous ways we did today? And that's simple. It's because I understand that humans don't change over time. Humans will always seek the easiest course of action, or what seems to be the easiest course of action, even if that's a slippery slope to a much harder place. So what we're experiencing today is just the most amazing amount of easing. Something, you know, as much as I understood in writing that in 2007, that we were going to be going down a path of even cheaper money and more floods of it. I mean, let's add this up, right? Our current short-term interest rates are standing at 0% right now, and trillions of dollars have been applied. All of that was something that I foresaw is becoming a possibility, but the amounts of it are surprising even to me. I did not expect this. In fact, let's do this. In the 1 year since the collapse of Bear Stearns, the Federal Reserve has created the following alphabet soup litany of programs to fight off this epic debt and derivatives collapse. So let's review this for a second. First, I'm going to do this alphabetically because I don't know how else to organize it anymore. We've got the Asset-Backed Commercial Paper MMF Liquid Facility, right? That's the ABCPMMFLF, right? That's a nice one. That's an A. We've got all this outright ownership stake by the U.S. government now in AIG. Central Bank Liquidity Swaps, right? Those are the CBLSs. Those are billions and billions. We've got a Commercial Paper Funding Facility. We've got loans to J.P. Morgan, Citi, Bank of America, all these other banks. We've got Maiden Lanes 1 and 2 for the Bear Stearns bailout. We've got a Money Market Investor Funding Facility. That's the MMIFF, for those of you, the MMIF, You know, that's just a great one. Monetization of Fannie, Freddie, MBS, and debt, right? Mortgage-backed securities and their debt. We've got monetization of U.S. Treasuries. We've got primary dealer credit facilities, the PDCF.
Stop.
The term auction facility, the TAF. We've got the term asset-backed securities loan facility, the TALF, TALF. We've got a term auction facility. We've got a term securities lending options program. That's the top. And we've got a term securities lending facility, the TSLF. I mean, what? Look at this. Look at this list. They could have just said, we're throwing a few trillion at this, but they wrapped it in all these very big, funny-sounding things with nice, tight acronyms or not. And all of these represent really just one thing, printing money out of thin air to buy bad debt. And all of those programs that I just mentioned are all just Federal Reserve programs. So let's also include the federal government into this list of activities, shall we? We've got the original stimulus bill of $150 billion. Remember, that was $300 checks. It was mailed to nearly everyone. Then we had the $800 billion bailout of Fannie and Freddie and the federal home loan boards. Then we had the Troubled Asset Relief Program, the so-called TARP, at $750 billion. Now we've got a second stimulus bill in the works at $750 billion, or maybe $850. They have to settle on a number. If we add up all of this, that first list of acronyms, because the Fed loves acronyms, and the second list coming out of the federal government, this now adds up now to more than $13 trillion of either committed or spent money. And where did all that money come from? Where did that money come from? Well, all of that money was printed out of thin air. And so when I said way back in 2007 that I was going to predict that we were going to see a flood of cheap money, I did not expect a flood of acronyms to go with that. This is a staggering list when you put it all in one spot. And so that's the world we live in. And the purpose of this site and this podcast and all of the writings that I do is to help you stay abreast of this stuff. The reason these things are presented the way they are is because they're designed to be confusing enough that people won't really focus on them, add them up, and look at them all at once. There's no reason why, you know, what is a term securities lending options program? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It would take weeks to figure out what it is. But you know what? We could probably summarize it very quickly. It's money printed out of thin air and handed over to banks and other financial institutions that took risky gambles and lost the bet. That's what that program represents. So that's all we need to understand about most of these programs. Now, if you assume, like I do, that our long-term debt to GDP chart is going to retrace all the way back to a ratio near 180%, this means we're somewhere around a third of the way there. We've got $13 trillion in fresh money that's been printed to try and counter the implosion of debt. Well, I think we're going to have to, somewhere in the vicinity of $20 to $30 trillion is probably the total amount of debt destruction that's going to be required in order to bring that long-term debt chart all the way back down to where it needs to be. So we might observe somewhat nervously that despite flinging nearly 100% of our reported GDP at the problem, that lending is still dead in the water, stocks are off 50%, housing prices are still sliding, unemployment is increasing, global trade is still collapsing, and that banks remain insolvent. Now, you might think that with $13 trillion you could solve a lot of problems, but apparently we couldn't solve any of the above problems I just mentioned. And so what's the problem here? The problem is that the current model of what's wrong that's being used and applied and as the rational basis for all these decisions, that model that's in place in Washington, D.C. right now is the wrong model. The right model, one which can make sense out of all of this, is that we have a problem of too much debt, not too little spending. When we see it that way, then kind of everything fits. If you had too much debt, then it doesn't really make sense that adding more debt to that equation is going to solve any of your problems. That's what every single one of these acronyms has been, every one of the government programs has been, is really around the additional incremental application of more debt. So I would say that we actually suffer from a surplus of debt, not a deficit of spending. Let me say that again. We suffer from a surplus of debt, not a deficit of spending. So this brings us to the latest announcement this week from, it's a combo program, it's by the Treasury, it's by the FDIC, and the Federal Reserve all together for another $1 trillion program. And this time it's supposed to offload all of these so-called dead toxic assets from the banks. And two things I want to talk about here. The first is, what is this latest toxic program so we understand what it is? And the second is, what are its chances of working? So here's the theory. Here's how the plan is designed to work. The Treasury's program has five steps to it. The first step, step one, a bank decides what pool of assets they would like to sell. Okay, that's straightforward. Step two, after determining that it would be willing to leverage the pool of assets that we're talking about here, the FDIC will conduct an auction. So for instance, if mortgages with $100 of face value were offered, they might be bought for, say, $84. Step three, out of this $84 then, the FDIC would provide guarantees for 72 of those dollars, leaving $12 that has to be financed somewhere else. In step four, the Treasury then provides half of that additional financing. So in this example, if there was $12 left over, 72 is being guaranteed by the FDIC. Out of that $12, the Treasury is going to put $6 in, and then they'll find private investors who will put the other $6 in. And then in step five, the private investor, whoever that would be, would then manage how the servicing of that asset pool. And then they would use managers, and I guess the FDIC approves of it. And, you know, there's some steps in there to assure that taxpayer money is safe and all of that.
All right, that's the theory. That sounds pretty easy. What's the problem?
Let me talk about how I probably would guess this is going to go. I'll call this how the plan would actually work. So let's take those same five steps again. In step one, a bank will decide to sell off only its most troubled, toxic garbage, really assets that nobody would ever in their right mind buy because they're utterly worthless. Stuff that would be worth perhaps maybe 5 cents on the dollar to a speculator. What happens is a mortgage pool gets sliced up into a big, giant, this big, giant pool of mortgages get sliced up into this series of tranches. The ones on the bottom are completely worthless. Only the one on the top has any value at all. The only way this program will work is if the entire series of tranches, the whole pool, is sold off. But since the bank gets to decide, let me guess which ones are going to sell off. They're going to sell off the ones that have zero value, or perhaps, you know, a few cents on the dollar. Step two, after determining that it would be willing to leverage this pool, the FDIC will conduct an auction. So what they're going to do here is they're going to sell off assets that probably have a value of maybe 5 cents on the dollar for 84 cents. That would be step two. Step three is, one day after the selling of all these dodgy mortgages that was bought by some well-connected private investors, what's going to happen is they're going to say, oh gosh, we got this all wrong, and they're going to close down as a bankrupt entity, and everybody says, gosh, you know, that was terrible luck. That was just awful luck. We bought a bunch of stuff for 84 cents on the dollar that was only worth, you know, nothing, and we lost all that money. The day after that, then the bank is free to go back and buy all these former mortgage assets for a fraction of what they just sold them for the day prior. And the bank is now recapitalized. And the bank will use these new proceeds possibly to go out and buy up distressed properties for pennies on the dollar. So you can wash, rinse, repeat this and use trillions instead of billions. And, you know, we get to the final step in all of this, is that all of the myriad future things that taxpayers thought they were going to be able to do, they won't be able to do. Because what happened in this program was insider trading, graft, and a little bit of fraud, which was exactly what we saw happen in the SNL resolution with the Resolution Trust Corporation. Insiders couldn't resist, made a killing off of it, left the nation a little bit more impoverished. In this game that I've just laid out, I think what's going to happen is the bank's going to sell off stuff that really has zero value. They're going to be selling it to insiders who are going to gladly and willingly, quote unquote, go out of business after making a bad decision. And what it really represents is just a transfer of taxpayer money to banks. So if we want to do that, I think we should do it directly. We shouldn't call it a trillion-dollar program, and it shouldn't have fancy acronyms. I think we should just transfer the money directly over to the banks. Now, most people would probably object to that, so I guess that's why we're not going down that path. I will note that there's another way out of all of this, and there's a way that we should be taking, and the way that I would endorse. And here's how that way would go. Instead of us transferring $300 billion to Citibank, Citi has around $300 billion in debt, I believe, somewhere in that zone. So what should happen is that the debt holders of Citibank should eat those losses. What should happen is that instead of holding debt in the company, they should be forced to accept some sort of a of either a complete loss or a conversion of that debt to equity so that they're just like any other equity holder. They might get zero, they might get something if the company turns around. But that would immediately provide $300 billion of recapitalization to Citi. We could do that. It would be easy. The problem is that the people who hold those $300 billion are extremely well-connected, and they're not going to willingly go for that program.
Okay, hold on one second, Chris. I just want to chime in and ask, is there anything new and different about this program that you're describing here?
Becca, this is exactly comparable to any other program that I've seen coming along starting probably, you know, from the beginning of this crisis. So we can go back, you know, to 2007, 2008, and this is just another flavor, another version of the exact same process that we've seen before. So what I mean by that is that this is, it's complicated. It's couched in fairly excited terms. If we have to do this and we all have to support it, or bad things will happen, which are ill-defined and not really explicitly stated. So in how it's being packaged and sold is identical to all the other programs I've seen so far. And the part that really gets me a little bit irked at this stage is that there's nothing new in what this is presenting in terms of an understanding of what the actual problems are. So even if we take it at face value, let me ignore all the graft and fraud and theft that's probably going to follow along with this program, as naturally as night follows day, and as certainly as we've seen in every other program so far, with Goldman Sachs receiving all these billions of dollars while their ex-CEO was Treasury Secretary. This is just how this world works. So the part that's exactly identical to me about this is that what it represents at its fundamental core is some antiquated notion that what we really want is we want to get more debt out into society faster. So let me detangle that a little bit. What's being said here is, if we take all these bad assets off of the bank's balance sheets, okay, they made some mistakes and it was trillions of dollars and they almost brought the whole Western world down. What we're going to do is we're going to take that off and make them whole. We're not going to ask for any sacrifices from their bondholders, and we're going to try and keep the shareholders all square. And by taking these bad assets off of the books of the banks, they can go out and they can lend. Well, two things had to happen here in order for this whole grand scheme to work out. The first is the government has to go into debt to take those debts off the bank's balance sheet. So the government has to borrow the money to pull that stuff off. The FDIC doesn't have that 72 cents on the dollar sitting around. They're borrowing that. So the government's going to borrow money to take bad debts off of banks' balance sheets so that banks can return to lending. That is, start lending money out so people can borrow. The explicit assumption and implicit assumption under all of this is that we're going to go into debt so that banks can continue the process of creating more debt. And that somehow in this, we're not supposed to ask, and we're supposed to be patriotic, and we're supposed to support this, and we're not supposed to ask that other question, which is, how does going deeper into debt so we can go deeper into debt solve a problem that's rooted in debt?
It's a good question.
That's the fundamental disconnect I have with this. So first, we describe what the program is. It's a complicated thing. It involves the FDIC, the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve, some private investors. It's got fancy acronyms. It's going to have rules and regulations. The base of it all, it's about how do we transfer taxpayer money into these banks in some sort of complicated way. But this new program is going to fail, just like the other ones in that whole laundry list of acronyms that I read off before. It's going to fail because its primary assumption is that bad loans are the source of the problem. And they're not. They are the symptom of the problem. Having the government go deeper into debt so that they can get the banks back to rapidly issuing new credit, new debt, is a solution that completely misses the mark, because it's actually not applied to the cause of the problem. The cause of our current situation was too much debt relative to the size of our economy. So to me, it's the equivalent of applying leeches to a patient with internal bleeding. It's a very old, antiquated solution that just fundamentally doesn't understand what the actual problem is at this point in time. So the so-called solution is actually compounding the problem. And this program is also going to fail because, just like all the others, the insiders are just not going to be able to prevent themselves from gaming the system. Theft, fraud, graft, these are not theoretical possibilities on the horizon. These are all dead certainties, already casting a dark shadow over this program, even before it has begun. So leeches are going to be affixed to the leeches, right? Just compounding the problem. That's how I look at it. So please, if you haven't yet, please read an article in Rolling Stone by Matt Tybee called The Big Takeover. I featured it on the site. We've got links to it. It's all over the place. Just Google it. The Big Takeover. You won't have any trouble finding it. It explains very clearly why I hold this view that the gaming of the system is going to continue to be an endemic problem that's going to hamstring any of the solutions that we're coming out with. We've absolutely got to get our hands around that issue. In my perfect world, we would see some measure of accountability returning to our landscape. We would see people who have already gamed the system in ways that break both the spirit and the letter of the law be held accountable in some way. And we haven't seen that yet. Not even a little bit. Bernie Madoff is the only high-profile figure I can think of, and that's because he just blatantly stole money. But there are other people who've done things equally as bad, and we've not yet seen them held to account. So my conclusion here is that this toxic asset plan by the Treasury is really just one more in a long string of programs that have so far failed and will continue to fail because they're treating the problem of too much debt by moving that debt off of private books and into public hands. Remember, we suffer from a surplus of debt, not a deficit of spending. So the entire notion that we can get back to how things were by shuffling debt from one pocket of our society into another pocket, it's really not credible. In fact, it's not even logical. By preserving the status quo and defending the interests of the wealthy and the well-connected, which is the only things these programs do effectively, we are wasting money, we're wasting effort, and most tragically, we're wasting time. Now, while I reserve some small measure of hope that I'm somehow wrong about all this and the government is doing the right things, I am not relying on those hopes being realized for my personal security and well-being. Which brings us to why so much energy has been poured into creating the crash course and the website and now the groups functionality at the site. Because as I see it, our two primary needs right now are to learn and to connect. So we need to educate ourselves about the true state of the current condition and remain vigilant and alert for signs that things have changed. The most recent alert that I sent out about the Fed announcing that they would begin openly buying U.S. government debt was one such game-changing news element. That was the admission that the U.S. government could no longer secure its funding needs from the rest of the world and now was going to begin securing them from thin air. That's a game changer. But the implications of these changes are so broad and so vast, they touch on literally every facet of our current existence. There's no way to even keep abreast of them all, live our daily lives, and take actions to protect ourselves and our communities at the same time. So this is where we need to come together. And this is what the upcoming seminar in Virginia is specifically going to address. We won't be spending any time on the crash course itself. Perhaps a high-level tour linking the higher concepts, but that's it. Maybe 1 hour out of the whole weekend. The rest of the time will be spent connecting, discussing, planning. And this is what works so well in the Roe seminar, and this is what we're going to be doing. You'll see Becca and myself, and we'll explain clearly what we did and why. And you'll connect with other people who are already active and well along in their personal journeys of preparation. We'll scheme, we'll plan, we'll make lists, we'll share ideas. We'll probably stay up too late, and we'll be getting up too early. So if you're on the fence about this, I think you should come. And if you're unsure about what to do next or feel stuck, you should come.
Again, the feedback that we got from Roe was really consistent. It was the intimate environment that we were in relationship with each other during that weekend where we were eating together, talking together, you know, taking walks together during breaks, that we were building a connection with one another around this material. And we're hoping that the seminar in Virginia will be even have more of an opportunity for that kind of activity. We're going to be bringing our whole family. All three kids are coming down. They're going to be out romping in the woods while we'll be inside doing the seminar during the day. And we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be excellent. There are a few spaces left, but please don't wait till the last minute to sign up. I know there were at least 40 people that got turned away from the Roe conference because they waited until the last few days and there simply wasn't space. So if you're on the fence, if you're thinking about it at all, please make a decision now because I don't want you to miss the opportunity if you have the chance.
Yeah, and for anybody who's lives further north than we do here in Massachusetts, we still have snow on the ground in a few spots. So I'm looking forward to seeing some warm
spring.
Weather in spring. Absolutely. Okay, well, that's that section. I think it's time to move on to our subscriber question for the day.
Okay, we've got a lengthy question from Denny. He says, "Hi, I'm a subscriber, and I'm writing to ask your permission to allow me to pass along subscriber reports to a friend of mine who is a Buddhist monk. He does not stand to gain financially from this info, as he has no money. He does not have much more than his robes and his alms food bowl, and prefers it that way. It would help him to spread the word and potentially minimize future suffering. This was his reply when I wrote to tell him about the crash course last fall. I appreciate hearing about the crash course from you, and I've been spreading the word about chrismartinson.com myself. I believe Ajya Kito's sister first told us about it, in the summer sometime, and I appreciated and enjoyed it. Chris does a great job teaching some very timely things and sharing a perspective that is sorely lacking in the mainstream press. Before Chris announced that he was producing a DVD, I downloaded all of the crash course and created an online version that I could share with people. Ajahn Pisano took a version to watch and distribute in Thailand. He too enjoyed the presentations. When I mentioned it to Ajahn Sona, he arranged to show it to the entire community at Birkin. Several of the guests here were a little freaked out. They had never considered such things, but most everyone is quite receptive. All of the Aj and Ajahns are noted Westerners, well-respected and relatively senior monks in the Thai forest tradition. Two of them are monastery abbots. Thanks. Best wishes, Denny."
Denny, you have my complete permission to pass along anything you want to as many monks as you happen to know. And let me broaden this out. If you are a subscriber, anybody out there, I trust you. And I give my permission to circulate the subscriber reports to people who you feel may benefit from them in some way, shape, or form. I trust that if they see value in that, that they may become a subscriber and that this will all work out. And I have that faith. I will ask that that's limited to emailing things around. I would not be happy to see the subscriber reports posted publicly somewhere. So I'm going to draw that line. But I'm completely fine with people passing reports around. And I think that's an important thing for the growth of the site and for getting the word out. So it's a delicate line. Thank you for asking. I really appreciate that you took the time to ask the question, and I really appreciated hearing about the ways in which the crash course has been spreading out into places I hadn't anticipated and having impacts that I hadn't thought about or even imagined could happen. So I also want to thank you for taking the time and letting me know about monks in Thailand who may be getting something from this as well.
It's a great story.
It is a great story. And that's another behind-the-scenes thing that most people would be unaware of. It's the number of emails that we receive from now all over the world saying that something about the crash course crystallized something. If I could summarize them, for most people it's that it crystallized something they already knew, mm-hmm. and helped frame it in a way that just snapped a few pieces in place. Either it was an intuition or a feeling, or they'd had different pieces of the three E's floating around, but having it in one spot has helped provide that crystallizing moment. So again, my mission is to help create a tipping point of awareness around the true problems that we face. And anything we can do to further that is you absolutely have my permission to do. And I'm going to trust that each of you know what that means in your corner of the world. And I'm not looking in any way, shape, or form to try and predict or guide all of those different things that you might think of and do. Let's do this together, and let's have a good time doing it as well. Well, we've come to the end of another podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed bringing it to you. As always, our purpose is to help you see around the corners ahead. Remember, the next 20 years are going to be completely unlike the last 20 years. None of us are going to get through these next few years alone. All of us are going to get through them together. I invite you to trust yourself in every decision and to assume responsibility for yourself, your community, and your future. Until next time, this is Chris Martinson.
This is Becca.
Thank you for listening.
This concludes this podcast by Chris Martinson. To gain further insights into where things stand today and what might happen tomorrow, please visit chrismartinson.com. That's chrismartinson.com. Please join Chris Martinson next time to continue your journey towards awareness, understanding, and action.